take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Why would I spend the rest of this week so bitter?
And welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your struggling and curious expatriate of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
When I can go therapy, when I can go therapy 2 times a day. I don't want to be around me, and I don't blame you if you're blocking all my calls.
You have just been listening to Therapy, Coming Out of Your Therapy. That is Mary J. Blige from her new album, which is called The London Sessions, which sounds like a record that should come out in 1968.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have Ben Ratliff here. Hi, Ben.
Hey, John.
Ben did not go to London, but he did listen to the London Sessions and write about it in this Sunday's Arts and Leisure section.
I did.
Before we get into why Mary is undergoing this, I wouldn't say a radical makeover, but a bit of a makeover on this album, let's talk about, as you talk about, the Mary J. Blige Enterprise.
Yeah.
What is the Mary J. Blige Enterprise at this moment in time?
Well, it's like there's her music and then there's her story, the plot, her representation as a persona as it moves through time. It's all, you know, we've gone through many stages of self-realization and rehab and moving into middle age and that kind of stuff. She's 43-ish right now. She sort of owns that space, you know, the ability to, with each record, say, this is the stage that I'm at currently in the story of Mary J. Blige.
It's actually very Taylor Swift in that way.
Yeah.
Not that Mary got it from Taylor, but there is a specificity. Same thing with Adele. It's a moment in time. Mary J. Blige isn't doing conceptual work. She's not doing abstract experimentation.
Right.
She's basically reporting on how she's doing.
And it's very much, you know, as well as getting glory, becoming glorious.
Yes.
It's also...
She's been glorious.
She has been glorious. It's also about helping others in some kind of way.
Yeah, certainly in the Oprah era.
Yes.
You know, I think maybe Mary J. Blige in the mid-90s was not about that.
Right.
But Mary J. Blige sort of after her first grown woman, My Life comeback in the early aughts has become this like a passion figure, not just in R&B, but in popular culture. And I would actually venture to say more out in the mainstream than in R&B as it has moved, because as R&B has changed, it has moved away from these sorts of singers. It has moved away from people with Mary's skill, people with her penchant for impassioned presentation.
Let's talk about her skill for a second. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking about a Mary J. Blige concert I saw in New Orleans at the Essence Festival a couple of years ago, which is actually one of the greatest performances I've seen by anyone doing anything. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because she isn't one of those people who can stun you within a single phrase or it's not sort of like sharp performance. It's like long game stuff.
Yeah,
you know, she got so far into it. Mm-hmm. First of all, this was to some extent this was her audience.
Sure.
You know, this was a mostly middle age, almost entirely black, very female audience. She knew that she was there to kill them, and she did.
Yes,
and it was sort of like it worked over time. You know, each song she got in a little bit deeper. She wasn't rushing anything, and she wasn't. It wasn't stunning from moment to moment, you know, but
in total.
But yes, exactly. In total, it was amazing.
It had sermon power.
Yeah. Yeah. She's also not a singer who can do incredible asides all the time, you know, get move out of the song constantly and excite you with that whole sort of, you know, meta thing or commentary on the side. But she did enough of it that it was like... I don't even know what happened. It was strange. It was not a kind of performance that I'm really familiar with. It wasn't like top level, you know, gospel type. It wasn't the rhetoric of gospel, the musical rhetoric of gospel. It wasn't the musical rhetoric of straight pop. It was Mary J. Blige on full. It was quite amazing.
Well, I know that you have spent some time covering music that I would argue maybe also operates in that format. You know, your Allman Brothers, your Grateful Deads, where the sort of
cumulative power.
Yeah, the moment-to-moment highs maybe aren't that high.
Yeah.
Unless you are moment-to-moment high. But in total, there's a value to the whole.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's any similarity that you see between how Mary doled out that show and how some of these other groups that specialize in that kind of thing.
You know all my secrets.
I do.
You're speaking my language.
That's why I'm here.
It's also, it's kind of a middle-aged thing, you know?
Not to be underestimated.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be able to achieve power that expands within the span of 2 hours, that's an incredible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Patience also. Patience.
Patience in both the performer and the audience.
Yes.
That's not to be underestimated. Because the type of shows that Mary J. Blige is doing now in 2014 or in the 2010s are not the shows that she was doing in the 90s and early 2000s.
Right.
At some point when her music changed, my sense is that her live shows changed as well. And that what we're seeing is an adult show, adult performance, an adult attitude. So Mary J. Blige is an adult. She has her audience. You see her essence. She's killing.
Mm.
Why does she need to change? Why does she have to try anything new? Just be Mary.
So we talk about Think Like a Man too? Is that a key to why she has to change?
I think it is an example of where we are about to, what we are about to discuss.
Yeah.
I think it's a symptom. I don't think it's a call. I don't think it's a disease. I think it's a symptom.
Well, forget about Think Like a Man too. The soundtrack album, which you already have. Yes, the soundtrack album to the movie called Think Like a Man too, which came out over the summer, although very few people noticed it.
Yes.
It had Mary J. Blige's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
She did every track on that soundtrack album. It was the lowest selling Mary J. Blige record in history.
There you go.
There was also a record, there was a Christmas record, but we're not talking about that. There was a record in 2011 called My Life 2, The Journey Continues, Act 1. This is like such a mind-blowing title.
It came out on Saturday Night Live Records.
Also, Roman numerals for My Life 2, Arabic for Act 1.
Well, that's very legal scholarly, if I'm not mistaken. That's a, you know, sometimes it's a Roman numeral.
I suppose that's right.
Yeah, so, you know.
Typographical jujitsu.
A lot of lawyers involved in that.
So that was the last proper Mary J. Blige album.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not very distinguished.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much, here I am on this stage of my journey, my life to act one. All this sort of positioning about the ongoing project of being Mary J. Blige.
Aware of the eyeballs.
It
knows the eyeballs are on.
Exactly. But the songs themselves were not that amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And this must have to do with the range of her, you know, it must have to do with her Rolodex. In general, the people that she's working with.
Okay. Let me push back on that.
Sure.
Around that era, she did a record with Drake.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad. Not album, but like a song with Drake.
Yep.
It's not that bad. I would venture to say Mary J. Blige has a pretty good Rolodex. And if she wants to call up whoever and say, I'm Mary J. Blige, I want a beat from you.
But she's an album. You know what? I think she's an album artist. This goes back to the Mary J. Blige of the 2 hour performances.
Okay.
You know, so absolutely she could get Drake for a song. But
she could get Drake for an album if she wanted.
Do you?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, this is pure conjecture and almost unworthy of a conversation.
Oh, well, then let's not dignify it.
But I think of her as somebody who gives you 45 minutes to an hour and thinks of a kind of a large project, a continuity.
Okay. Well, let's say you're right.
I rarely am.
No. Let's say you're right, because I don't think my follow-up is dependent upon me being right or you being right.
Mm.
Mary J. Blige is an R&B singer,
yes,
who emphasizes vocal talent in her early 40s. What is Mary J. Blige to do in the current environment? If you look at other singers who are either from her generation or just older than she is, where have they ended up? They're making like smooth R&B albums coming out on Shanaki, you know? Like, where do they end up? Mary J. Blige is too good for that fate.
Mm-hmm.
But surely she has to end up somewhere.
Yeah.
And if you look at the game as currently structured, where can she comfortably be at home?
Right.
Is there an answer? Could she – does
the
she fit in?
The answer might be the record that she made.
Well, that's my question, because I think Like a Man Too is actually one kind of answer to that question, which
yeah.
is it's sort of a conceptual piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to give it that much credit, but it's sort of a conceptual piece. And Mary J. Blige is a heritage artist at this point, and people who are into that movie would conceptually
Amazing.
Want
– Amazing.
People would conceptually want a whole bunch of new music by Mary J. Blige.
A heritage artist.
Oh, that's real.
Out there with Bach. And the songs on the Think Like a Man 2 soundtrack, taken individually, mm-hmm. were not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
That's the amazing thing.
Who did the songwriting on that album?
Well, there was a lot of Terrius Nash on it.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right.
And I don't know who else.
They're a great thing. Why not Terrius Nash doing a whole Mary
but
record?
Terrius, but with Mary J. Blige, it has to be special. There has to be something special. I mean, all these people, Drake, The Dream, whatever – they make records all over the place.
Sure,
you know?
but this is the new economy.
But this is Mary J. Blige. Has got to be something special.
Okay, but even
if she's part of the old economy, don't treat her like the new economy.
But
disrespect her
and yet she is treating herself as part of the new economy by
yeah.
making the decision to make the London Sessions.
So the London Sessions.
This is an important – here's the thing. Recently, I forget if we were having this conversation or if I was talking to JP about it, but there's this thing where, you know, you look at Aretha and Aretha's going to put out a record.
Mm, yeah.
And like really all you can do with Aretha right now is have her cover other people's songs. No one is going to Aretha with strong quality material, good production, and making her not a modern sounding record in the sense that it could get played on Hot 97, but a contemporary-ish record.
I don't know why that is.
I don't know why that is either.
They did. Maybe it worked for Johnny Cash. You know what I mean?
But maybe there's a dearth of songwriting and production talent on the hip-hop and R&B side who wants to take time out of their month or their year to go help Aretha or to go work with Aretha.
Hard to imagine.
But you don't know. It's possible.
Yeah.
So what you end up with are a lot of these sort of like respectful and not that interesting covers albums by aging R&B stars.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Mary is getting close to that stage of her career. She's obviously – Aretha's got 20, 25, 30 years on her.
Mm.
But Mary, given how fast these things move, is sort of approaching that stage of her career.
Mm-hmm.
So if this album had not been the London Sessions but had been the covers, Volume 1, Act B, you know, if it had been something like that, we'd say, okay, well, this is where Mary's at. And
right.
we wouldn't have felt a way about it. We wouldn't have said, oh, I wish she was in the pop economy. I wish I heard her on the radio three times. This is just where we accept that a singer of that age and that background is just going to end up at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's right, but it's become sort of a truism.
Right.
That, to me, is why the London Sessions seem like an incredibly smart idea to forestall that inevitable conclusion. So talk about why this record exists, how it came to pass, and what exactly is Mary – why is this a comfort space for her?
Well, my understanding is that she took an interest in Disclosure mm-hmm. for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And she got Disclosure, the brother duo electronic
– Garage music.
Act, yep, from London.
Mm-hmm.
Last year sometime, and she came up with the idea of doing a track together.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get together in the same studio. They sent her the stems, and she worked on it, you know, and mailed it to her, and she worked on it, and she did. And she sang in a remix, a new version of their song, F for You.
Should we listen to that for
Let's
a minute?
Let's listen to a minute of that. So that's F for You, Mary J. Blige singing over Disclosure,
mm-hmm.
and that came out on a retooled version of the Disclosure
right.
record. Well, and then you saw the next stage in a way, right, with Sam Smith.
The Sam Smith, yes.
She started performing
yeah,
a
she
couple
showed,
times with Sam Smith.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if the time I saw was the first time. I think it was the first time. Sam Smith played the Apollo
mm-hmm.
right around his album release.
Right.
And as part of the encore for that show, Mary J. Blige came out with him
yeah.
to sing a duet of, I guess it was Stay With Me?
I suppose.
I'm yeah. not totally remembering right now. I'm pretty sure it would Stay With Me.
Yeah.
People go wild. People lose their stuff. It's It's a mind-bending moment. And it, now keep in mind, this is at the Apollo, so it has a fair amount of symbolic resonance, but it's not like this is a traditional Apollo crowd. You know, right. this is not a Black Harlem crowd. This is a bunch of media people.
So,
but they still go ape for it. They love it. They love every minute of it.
Yeah.
You see the kinship between Sam Smith's vocal ambition and Mary's very secure vocal position.
Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Why would it be that a Sam Smith would love a Mary J. Blige?
Well, look, Sam Smith is a guy who grew up idolizing diva R&B. Mm-hmm. And what he is doing in his own way is a form of diva R&B, although he's not a woman, and he doesn't have, frankly, quite the... He has like a lot of dexterity in his voice, but he doesn't actually have a tremendous amount of power.
Gravitas.
Yeah. There's no center. I mean, we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. There's something a little bit hollow about Sam Smith's singing.
Yeah.
I'd venture to say he's like an expert singer, but maybe not a beautiful singer. Mm-hmm. He reminds me a little bit of David Archuleta.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah. I mean, I've said a couple of not nice things about Sam Smith, but that may be the least nice thing I've said about Sam Smith.
In my thinking, that's
a home run. Great. Well, so he is David Archuleta gone right. Mm-hmm. He's David Archuleta with hits.
Yeah.
Sam Smith, he wants to sing in the same idioms as a Mary, as an Aretha, as an Adele.
Sure.
So when someone like Mary takes an interest in what he's doing, it is confirmation that not only is he a success, but he's a success on the path that he wants to be.
Right. So it's a good it all works out. You
now,
know, it's clear that Sam Smith reveres Mary J. Blige. She likes his stuff. Mm-hmm. She likes Disclosure. It all starts to fit together.
Can I just add that she blew him off the damn stage?
At the Apollo?
Blew him off the stage.
Good.
I agree. She's... And it's almost not even a shot on Sam Smith, because Sam Smith, I thought, was doing everything he had in him to not be blown off the stage.
Right.
But also, I think, if he didn't get blown off the stage, he would feel that the moment was somehow wrong.
Right.
It's that moment is designed for him to cede his authority to Mary, and for Mary to come and like push his head out of the way and be like, I got this.
Right.
So
Mary J. Blige, the gravitas machine, travels to England and starts working.
In a gravitas machine or on a plane?
She is her own gravitas machine.
And it can go transatlantic.
Yes, it can.
Okay, that's great. That's great.
She travels to England and she is working with these people as a group, as an interrelated group.
Yes.
Do they all work together among each other? I'm not sure. But
I don't know if ordinarily they all work together, but yes. I think there are enough connections between various people.
Right. We're talking about Sam Smith, Disclosure, Naughty Boy.
Emily Sandé.
Emily Sandé.
Egg White.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sam Romans.
Okay.
So she's got a brain trust.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, I believe Bo Diddley was about the same age when he went to London and made a record called the London Bo Diddley Sessions.
True? How about that? I did not know that. All right.
Now, there's something about – okay. So there's a brain trust waiting there.
Yes.
And they adore Mary J. Blige.
Yes.
And they're credible. They're making hits. Everything's all sort of set up.
Mm-hmm.
But London – England. Why England?
Okay.
What's the importance of England?
Well, here's my question. What do these people know about 43-year-old Mary J. Blige that American producers and songwriters don't or can't know?
Well, fresh eyes.
It's not that, though.
Well, what is it then?
I think the side thing to fresh eyes is a willingness to take her seriously as someone who can make a modern-sounding record.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who work in R&B in America who are songwriters or producers would rather work with Tinashe.
Right.
I think Tinashe is great.
Sure.
But they are not necessarily going to put that to work for someone like Mary J. Blige, who may be perceived as being past her commercial peak. I would actually be interested in...
Should we make a Northern Soul comparison here?
I think we can get to that. Mm-hmm. But I would have been really interested in if Mary J. Blige had worked with Harmony Samuels. Harmony is the guy who did Ariana Grande sort of like crossover 90s R&B, like Mariah songs on the first Ariana Grande record.
Yeah.
And also has like a bit of, he's been around for a long time and has like, he did a gospel song recently that I liked quite a bit and I didn't know it was him until I did some digging. Mm-hmm. He sort of has a varied repertoire as fundamentally a mainstream R&B producer, but with some church in him and with a slightly more mature approach to sort of a younger material.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been interested in that kind of record. This record, London Sessions, to me feels like a conceptually similar record. The grammar that these people bring to the table, that Emily Sandé brings to the table, Sam Smith, Disclosure, is the grammar of mid to late 90s, yep. British dance and soul.
Right.
That is a very – I lived in London in 97 and 99. Mm-hmm. I remember in those moments being like, I recognize everything that is happening here. I feel like when I listen to Speed Garage or Two Step, I understand this is basically – this is like thug version of Vocal House from the late 80s. Mm-hmm. It's hip-hop influenced. The crowds feel like hip-hop crowds back home.
Right.
So conceptually, these people are drawing from a well that is not very – not dissimilar from what from where Mary actually comes from. So, mm-hmm.
Okay, I see what you're
so
saying.
She's a well. They're a soft pillow for her to land on. They know her backstory,
yep.
not just as an emotional entity, but as a musical entity.
Yep.
And so they are making records outside of this project that are effectively informed by Mary J. Blige's 1992 to 1997 work.
And at the same time,
it's dignified, it's older, it's reserved, it has a maturity, it has a sheen on it. And Mary J. Blige is now not making youth music; she's making mature, sheeny music.
Right.
So this is actually quite a interesting overlap of interests.
Right.
That's how it feels. That's on paper. That's how it looked to me.
At the same time, the English. Well, you may have said this in some form a second ago, but the English are really good at reusing old styles or sticking with them and finding the good in them and pursuing them as if they're new.
And
basically
this is why,
as if they're new.
And this is why the Northern – talk about Northern Soul a little bit because that's important.
For people who don't know what Northern Soul is, in England, black music of the 60s was listened to in two different ways in the North and then the South of England. In the South, in London, people moved on to late 60s black music to a slower kind of groovier thing, whereas up north they were obsessed with sort of second-tier Motown or second-tier soul.
High energy,
dance. Brisk. These like working people up in Manchester are into brisk music that doesn't mess around.
Lodging it in Manchester.
Yeah, lodging it, right?
Absolutely.
And so it started this thing called Northern Soul. It was a dance club notion, you know, and all these people were crazy about these, not undiscovered, but underloved American soul records from a few years earlier.
Part of a long tradition of underloved black American musicians finding homes, whether it's in England or in France or Germany or whatnot.
But
part of a long thing.
And it continued. Also, you know, England, this is the country where skiffle happened, you know.
Yep.
This is the country where the mod revival actually had meaning and purpose. You know, the ska revival in the 80s had meaning and purpose. They can revive old things really well.
Yeah.
And with heart.
They are very apt scholars.
Yeah.
Very apt. And I don't mean scholar in a white collar sense at all. It's a very blue collar endeavor, I find. It's a very casual scholarship. When I lived there, I would meet people who knew things about 80s rap that I didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them were the people who wrote for the rap magazines, but some of them were just guys with jobs.
Yeah.
That's what they were into.
Yeah.
But there was something scholarly about the approach
that I found very
appealing and also vexing.
Well, so for all these reasons we're talking about, maybe Mary J. Blige is just the perfect ingredient to be dropped into the pool there.
Who wouldn't want to go to some country where the entire current generation of hitmakers was basically raised on you?
Mm.
Who wouldn't want to go to that place
right.
and then throw yourselves upon them and say, have your way.
Right.
Tell me where to go. I don't actually have a vision. And the interesting thing, and you talk about this in your piece, Mary J. Blige has been so almost like barge-like moving forward with her vision.
Mm-hmm.
She's not susceptible to influence. She's not susceptible to outside opinion. She's not going to be with the hot producer of the day or the hot sound of the day,
even
if she occasionally has tried.
Right.
Dun, 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 dun. You know, the Dr. Dre song, whatever. Like she has these moments, but that's not core Mary.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually, I think, a real generous act of release on her part to throw herself upon this group of people and say, let's try something.
Release is an interesting word to use and a good word to use. Why don't we listen to one more
of the new song.
Dance track on the new
So
record.
Let's listen to one of the there's a couple of Disclosure records.
That's right.
On this album. Let's listen to Right Now.
Don't wait for me. When you know you did me wrong, I've been holding on too long. Eventually, I'll make the call. They don't see what they do to me. On the other
So it's a disclosure song. Let's not call it something it's not. It's a disclosure.
Oh, no, it's a disclosure
song. It's a disclosure song.
It's not disclosure trying to make a song that would be just right somehow for Mary J. Blige.
No.
It's not that at all, which is kind of interesting.
No, and frankly, a relief, because if they had gone and tried to amend what they do to get on a Mary... Imagine this was not a London Sessions album. Imagine just an A&R guy who works at Mary's label called up all these guys and was like, well, you know, Mary's got a new record coming, and she's into you guys.
Yeah.
You think you can whip something up for a Mary J. Blige record?
Yeah.
And then they go home, and they're like, well, she likes us, but we can't give her what we really do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just do like a sort of herniated view, you know, like a truncated view of what we do, and we'll send that off.
Yeah.
This is not that. This is a disclosure record. It's Mary J. Blige singing on a disclosure record.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
It does sound great. And I feel like part of it, you just said the word release.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the word?
Release.
I feel like there's something about listening to Mary J. Blige, even at her best, where she's kind of spilling out over the edges. She's really a big presence. Being a sort of house music singer forces her to toe the line.
Oh, interesting.
It forces her to kind of like skinny down and obey the beat and be a functionary. And I don't know, it turns out she's great at this.
Yeah.
She's great at this kind of singing.
Well, also think about Mary J. Blige in 1992, right? She's really only 2 or 3 years out from having to be a vocal house singer.
Right.
I mean, look, she could have made Stephanie Mills records or something like that. But basically, with her particular type of talent, if she had been born 3 years earlier or gotten into the business 3 or 4 years earlier and lived in Chicago or Detroit, not New York, she'd basically be a house diva.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that singing or that style of singing is in her somewhere.
Yes.
So it's maybe not that hard for her to access that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a step, given that all the other records we've heard from her don't necessarily access that point for her, but maybe it's in her somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe she feels like this is her youth music.
Also, I know this sounds abstract and middle-aged and whatever, but there's something
that
about...
That is your Twitter bio, to be fair. Yeah,
there's something about these housey tracks that she's singing on where you feel like it's not all about her. It's not all about her anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, oh, what a relief.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm just listening to a really good singer right now. Take part in a ritual that I can also take part in.
Sure. Well, that's something you talk about in the record, is that about in your piece, is that this has freed her in a way from her own narrative.
Yeah, in a way.
I would almost contend that this is a prequel as opposed to a completely new narrative.
Yeah.
This almost feels like a prequel record. It's like what's the Star Wars?
Here's what I was.
Here's what I would have been.
Here's what I would have been if all that stuff hadn't happened.
Kind of. there's some of it that feels that way to me. On this album, I enjoyed much more the dance tracks than the sort of the slower stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that felt more like traditional Mary.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised it was not all up tempo stuff. I think it would have been great if it was all up tempo.
Well,
stuff.
That would have been so risky.
And yet not, because who is this record for if not people who want to see Mary J. Blige take a risk?
Yeah, but, you know.
Because this record's not going to get – like, where's this record going to get played?
Look, we might have the same reaction to it that we did to Think Like a Man 2. Like, yeah, you know, these songs are pretty good. But come on, where's the drama? Where's the Mary J. Blige-ness? Where's the report on your stage in life?
It is there.
Well, it is there. It's not so much in the dance tracks,
no.
But it is there on this record.
Yes, it is there. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit happy to hear a couple of the more aggrieved songs.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of got to be there to some degree.
Yeah. Because maybe it would have felt like slightly
That's
more
what Rodney Jerkins is there for.
To
ensure that
some
gets
of that's
in
there. Yeah. So he's the caretaker of Mary as she is.
Yeah.
As opposed to Mary as she might be.
Yeah.
And is that the function you think he serves on this record?
Well, I mean, he, you know, vocal production. I don't know what else. But he was there for all of this.
Mm-hmm. So Rodney Jerkins, he's my Harmony Samuels. He's my, you know, he's my guy on some level. Well, let's listen to, as we go out, let's listen to one of the songs that does feel very vintage Mary. And when I say vintage, I don't mean just 1993 or 1994. I also mean could be 2002, could be 2012. That song is Whole Damn Year. Tell me a little bit about that record.
Well, it's Mary J. Blige written with Emily Sande, and it's a very skillfully written song about what it's going to take for the narrator of the song to get close to a man.
And this is pulpy Mary. This is Mary muscles showing, flexed,
totally.
Flexed, sweat, bruising.
Yeah.
This is this is Mary as we know her.
Yeah.
It seems a little strange to me that she had to like go to the other side of the planet to get a record like this.
But it's also kind of a spare song. There's a bunch of songs on here that are mostly piano and then sort of orchestra or something like far in the background, you know, or the one has guitar and sort of like strings, you know. But it gives you the impression of spareness, which you don't always hear on a Mary J. Blige record. A Whole Damn Year is a song all about time, like it's going to take time. Bear with me. It's like a Mary J. Blige performance. Stay mm-hmm. with me. Yep. Stay with me. You know, I'm not going anywhere. I've got a lot to say.
It's durational.
It's this idea of I've had a really bad 5 years and I'm going to need at least another year before, you know, we can touch each other. Kind of amazing.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Very, very striking. And I thought in the context of this album, even more so. Because this album, as we talked before, this was the album where she's allowed to not be Mary. And yet there's this unmistakable moment of just pure, pure obligeness that shows that no matter how far she strays from the message.
That's right.
It always has to come back to that.
That's right. You take the girl out of Yonkers, you can't take Yonkers out of the girl.
It's a true story. So let's listen to a little bit of Whole Damn Year.
And by autumn I was left with nothing. It took a whole damn year to repair my body. It took a whole damn year. It took a whole damn year to repair my body. It's been a bad 5 years. Gonna take a long, long year for me to trust somebody. Gonna take a long, long year.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times Popcast. I have been your host, John Caramonica. Our guest has been Ben Ratliff. Our producers have been Jeremy Egner and Jocelyn Gonzalez. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Listen to our Spotify playlist, which does not include Taylor Swift, best I can tell. And we will be back next week.
You never heard this. I know you haven't misunderstood.